Today, I'd like to speak a bit on Guru Purnima since it's coming on 16th July, and more importantly on the guru-disciple relationship, because there's quite a bit of confusion on what this relationship is about. Plus, I get emails asking me questions like, you know, if I'm following a particular Kriya Yoga, is that path and that guru my guru? But if I read a book which I resonate with, is that my guru? So a lot of confusion and questions arise on this subject. And I can talk a bit about my own journey to just shed some light of understanding on how this works. Now see, as Sadhguru Jaggi Vasudev said something very simply, that when you are born, your parents look after you. You are not able to take care of yourself. So they become your gurus in that sense. When you grow up and you go to school and college, your teachers become your gurus because they are teaching you. They are imparting knowledge to you. Now, what about the journey of life? The journey of life which is fraught with so many challenges, so many pleasures and pains and losses and gains. Does it not make logical sense that a guru can help guide you along the way? Why? Because he or her, himself or herself, can walk down that road. It's simple common sense. The other thing to note, which may sound a bit abstract, is that the guru is a projection of your own higher self onto a form. Those with eyes to see have seen it. An example is my mother, where she saw the process of the higher self of the person project onto the form of somebody else, which that person resonated with. So while it appears that the guru is separate from the disciple, it actually is not so. It is the higher self of that person speaking to that person through another form which is considered the guru. If it's possible, Yash, Nick, I'd like to show three or four illustrations of this process which my mother has drawn as to how it happens. So it is truly a divine relationship, because deep down it is a relationship with yourself. When we bow down to someone, we think we are bowing down to another individual, but we are actually bowing down to the higher self.
If you told some people that, then they would have no difficulty bowing down. But some people are resistant. Why should I bow down to someone else? It is not about bowing down. It is symbolic. Indian traditions have a lot of meaning behind them. But guru means the giver of light, the remover of ignorance. Unfortunately, the word became so loaded with concepts and tradition that the younger generation became resistant to this word. I don't need a guru. Who do these gurus think of themselves? We should be our own gurus. Concepts upon concepts. Now, in my own case, what happened? Consciously, I was not looking for a guru. Many people are beginning their search looking for a guru. I was dragged to my teacher's house against my wishes on a Sunday morning when I was young. And I was going out on Saturday nights. And I remember the first time I heard him say everything is God's will. And I could not believe that something so obvious was being said by this man. And people were actually listening to it. I didn't have an arrogance about it. But I just felt, doesn't everybody know that everything is God's will? Why does it take someone to say that and others to hear it? So I left feeling unimpressed. But yet, next Sunday I went back. Something took me back. And again I heard the same thing. Everything is God's will, right from the time you were a child. Again I felt unimpressed. And at the end of that satsang, I saw people lining up to touch his feet. And out of peer pressure, I said, even I will line up and touch his feet, which I did. But when I did that, he tapped me on my head and he said, were you not here last Sunday? And I said, yes. So he said, be careful, young man. This is going to become your Sunday church. This was the year 2000. And I went to him till he passed away in September 2009. Because I saw that whatever he was saying was a validation of my daily living. If he said simple things that, you know, if someone upsets you, you don't know what has gone behind their life story, what has been their conditioning, what is their genetic makeup, what made them say what they say. They are just instruments through whom something has been said which might have hurt you. So simple it was for me to accept that in my daily living, whatever I encountered, I started seeing through the prism of what this man was saying. Everything I was looking at was like, my God, this makes so much sense. Simple things, like if he would say, life means pleasure one moment, pain another. And some news would come, bad news. Again, I would think, this is life. So then there was no longer running away from pain. Because I knew it was the design of life that we don't know what the next moment brings. So what happened was, this teaching was reflecting back to me what this person was saying in my own experience. That is when I felt that if this is the meaning of the word guru, then this person is my guru. It was not love at first sight where immediately had a big explosion of love and said, yo, I've met my guru finally. For me, the process was this way. And later on, when I read books of other masters on the guru-disciple relationship, I understood that I was tick-marking all the boxes which explain what the relationship is about. And I'm going to read out to y'all three or four of those sentences, because it can create a lot of clarity on this journey. To give one example, a question which I'm often asked is, can one have two gurus at the same time? Now, that is not possible. You can have two gurus, you can have three gurus, you can have four gurus, but not at the same time. Can you take the train and the bus at the same time? Or can you take only one of them when you're traveling? The destination is one, but can you be in two vehicles at the same time? If the guru is a projection of your higher self, can there be two at the same time? My journey, which included being a spiritual publisher, meant that I met many masters, many masters. I could write a book on it. Beautiful beings, many disciples of many masters who sang the glories of their guru, and some who tried to convert me with all good intention, because they were so impacted by the guru that they felt that, you know, we should convert him. So while I enjoyed meeting all of them, while I imbibed things from them, I kept coming back to this teaching, because my life's experience was being lived by this teaching, because all this teaching promised was peace. And that is what I was tasting all the time. And when I read Ramana Maharshi, when I read Nisargadatta Maharaj, and they said the same thing, then I felt that peace of mind is so overlooked, but it is the greatest gift I received through living this way. Just hold this, please. I had referred to this book, A Course in Miracles, which in the West is quite popular. One sentence which I read . Knowledge is not the motivation for learning this course. Peace is in this book. So for me, it just made everything completely clear that there is no gift greater than peace. And that is why when Ramana Maharshi was asked, how do I know that a sage is a sage? He said, by the sense of peace I feel within and the degree of respect I feel for him. Again, peace. And peace of mind through relationships, with others, with yourself, with the situations in your life. It is a glorious gift, underestimated and undervalued. This is a book called Light on the Guru-Disciple Relationship by Swami Satyananda Saraswati of the Bihar School of Yoga. This is a fantastic pointer. Awareness is love. If you are aware of the Guru all the time, it means you love him. So whoever you have come across, if he is in your awareness all the time, if something happens in your life and your first thought is, what did this person say? What did this person do? Whether it is someone long gone or someone present, if the person is in your field of consciousness all the time, it is a great pointer to who the Guru is. There is someone who had come to see me who was grappling with this. They were in the practice of a specific form of Kriya Yoga, which is very popular today. But he was being drawn to the teachings of Advaita. So his practice got shaken up a bit. Instead of every day, it became four times a week, three times a week. So he was feeling very guilty that what do I do? Because my guru is so-and-so, who's the head of this institution, and I'm practicing. So first my question was, what is giving you peace? Have you asked yourself that? He said, no. I said, but you will know what is giving you peace. And are you enjoying the practice? Because if you are not enjoying the practice, but the practice has promised you an outcome in the future, then your heart is not in the practice. So either put your heart in the practice and see the practice bloom, or consider what it is that has struck you deep down and follow that. You could very well do both. A practice is a practice. Yoga, pranayama and all are excellent for the health of the body. But if you have confusion on whether the head of the institute is your guru, whether someone else is your guru, then you have to ask yourself these questions. Who is in your mind all the time? Awareness is love. If someone is in your mind all the time, either you love that person or you hate that person. There's that story in Indian mythology, I forget the names, where these two asuras, I think, went to heaven and God told them that for all the nonsense that you've done, you have two options I'm giving you. You will take either 10 more births or you take one more birth as my enemy. And they both chose one more birth as the enemy of God. And God was very impressed because he knew. He didn't even have to ask them why they chose that one birth. Because God said, my devotees may think of me now and then, but my enemies think of me all the time. Because if awareness is love and the person is in your consciousness all the time, is anything more intimate than that? Is anything closer than that? To realize the inner guru, you need an external guru first. And this external guru becomes an important influence in your mind by exploding your inner consciousness like a volcano. In this volcano, each and every thought, emotion, memory, and past experience becomes a vision. You can see in the form of visions, experiences, dreams, feelings, and that is the capacity which you develop through the Guru. By exploding your inner consciousness like a volcano means what? Means your thought processes change. The way you viewed life and relationships undergo a shift. Where there was hatred and malice and jealousy and envy is no longer there. Resentments, hurts, anger. When all that is transformed and you look back and you feel, my God, if this had happened a year ago, my reaction would have been totally different. Today I react differently thanks to this understanding. That is the explosion, but it's a quiet explosion. It's not one where you see fireworks, which is what a lot of people are looking for, the experience. But when you look back and say, my God, things have really changed, you know. I'm really accepting people more for who they are. I'm accepting myself the way God made me. That is the explosion being referred to. These are gentle pointers. Please bear with me while I read out a couple of these. Even the guru finds it difficult to point out the ego. Only a guru who has got so much endurance, understanding, and patience can do it. And he tries and tries and tries to awaken the ego of the disciple, first by loving him, then by inspiring him, and then by teaching him the sadhana. By so many ways, the ego is brought out. And when the ego is brought out, the guru gives it a kick. Because when the ego comes out, you never know it. You know only when you get a kick. Which means that you start seeing the antics of the ego. Witnessing starts happening. A separation starts happening between your patterns and reactions. And you start seeing how this thing plays out. What triggers it? Who triggers it? Who pushes my buttons? Why do my buttons get pushed? Is it really something the other person has done, or is it my own issue which is getting triggered? So the teaching starts shedding light on this. That is why it is called an inward journey. For some people, this awareness has not awakened. They are mired and embroiled in the Maya. For some people, the spark has been ignited. What is this life about? Why is this happening to me? Who am I? Who is the other person? The guru is Brahma because he creates for his disciple a new and wondrous world, which is basically the way you look at the world. He is Vishnu because he sustains and protects him. And he is Shiva because he annihilates his world of individuality. I think this is so beautifully said. Because you stop seeing people as individuals with a sense of doership and volition. And all that finger pointing which you did in the past of blaming people and condemning them stops. That is what Shiva has done. That is the third eye operating. The third eye is activated. Shiva's third eye is because you stop seeing the world with these two eyes. Of course, you see it physically as the form of the world, but you operate from here. All the polaric opposites, likes and dislikes, black and white, up and down, left and right, front and back, good people and bad people, beautiful and ugly, starts dissolving. Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva operating through this. Someone passed a remark, a Westerner, that what is this god Shiva? Why does he need this big pokey fork next to him all the time? Is someone going to attack him and he's going to throw his trident and kill them? But that is a symbol. The trident is the symbol of the Iddha, the Pingla and the Sushumna, the solar channel, the lunar channel and the Sushumna. Because when Shiva consciousness prevails, the energy flows through the central channel. That is the symbol of Shiva. That is why these yogis in the Himalayas are carrying that trident with them. That is the ancient science. Someone asked Nisargadatta Maharaj that I like to go around meeting spiritual teachers, masters, and I enjoy it. And will it be beneficial to me? And he said, it will be, why not? But do you find water by digging many small wells all over the land or one deep well? In the West, when you die, they say rest in peace. Which means what? Life is not peaceful. Now rest in peace. But with the light of a spiritual teaching, you can rest in peace while living. Because what is dead is the ego with its sense of doership. That is the gift of the teaching. Then at the end of that life, they will put on your tombstone, rested in peace. The other point is on mixing up the message with the messenger. Now, if the postman comes to your house and gives you a letter, and you read the letter and it really impacts you, that message is the teaching. The postman has just delivered it to your doorstep. In that sense, the guru is the postman. The message is ancient. The message is eternal. So the guru knows that he or she is just delivering the message of God. The guru is not under any delusion that my message is what is impacting this person. That is why a genuine guru is one who does not choose to become a guru. Life makes him or her a guru. It is not a personal decision that I will be a guru. The teaching has impacted the person, and the person sees that the one who delivered the teaching is a living embodiment of that teaching. That is why the worship is done to the guru, not as an individual. So there is no question of a guru wanting his or her disciples to touch his feet, because the guru does not think that way. The guru knows that the guru is the messenger of God. When someone asked Siddharameshwar Maharaj, how does it feel when people touch your feet? He said, don't ask me, ask my feet. What have I got to do with it? I gave the example of Chidanand Saraswati, I think it was, who was giving a big lecture, hundreds of people, and to his utter surprise, he saw that the organizers had not created a platform on which he could sit and deliver the lecture. They had kept a rug on the ground with the mic, and he said, I will not begin this lecture till I am put on a raised platform. And he heard the people in the first row saying, look at the ego this guy has. He heard them, yet he insisted, I want that platform and then only will I speak. And when it was organized, the first thing he said was that people in this audience think that I, as an individual, wanted to sit on this platform so I'm above all of y'all and deliver the lecture. But all I was asking for was for you to honor the teaching which is coming through me. That is why I asked for the raised platform. So you are looking up to the teaching which is coming through me. Not, I don't care about me as an individual being given this importance. But since I heard this being said in the audience, I am addressing this issue. And that is why my own teacher said, when he was asked, how does one know that a sage is a sage? He said, I can tell you when a sage is not a sage, when there is no humility. I was in Kashmir recently and I met I could call him a Sufi mystic, but the locals call him a, let's say, Peer Baba. So he told me that once his disciple came a week ago, and he told his disciple that there's a rat coming into his house, creating a menace. So the disciple said, I'll just come back with a solution. And he got a cat. The disciple got the cat and told the Baba that you keep this in the house because the cat will chase the rat away. And the Baba said, nothing doing. So the disciple was shocked. He said, it's a practical solution. What's the problem? He said, I have a neighbor to the left and a neighbor to the right. This means the rat is going to go either to the left or to the right. But then what happens to my neighbor? Is this a practical solution you have offered? Or are you just thinking of me? Humility. He had gone to a temple, he's Muslim peer, who could see things which we can't see in our ordinary vision. And he saw a young girl who was being held captive in a sense, energetically. So he asked the temple priest, why has this happened? And the temple priest knew who he was. And he said, because this girl broke a command, she stole the prasad of Ganpati from the temple. So she has to bear the consequences. That is the law. So he said, nothing doing. This girl is young. How do you expect her to know all these laws and rules which you have applied? In an act of spontaneity, she has taken the prasad. Please forgive her and let her go. And he said, but I can't do anything now. A decision is a decision. You have any problem, take it to Ganpati. It was a Ganpati temple. He said, all right. He's very fond of Ganpati. So he invoked Ganpati. This is what he's told me. Whether it's believable, not believable, it's a personal thing. So he told Ganpati, he said, you know what? You are the protector. This is what your priest has gone and done. And I am standing in defense of this young girl. Is it right? And he said that Ganpati was so shocked to see me, a Muslim man, pleading on behalf of this girl. And he said, the only thing which wins me over is humility. And the fact that you have come for me and expressed this, you are so right. This should not have happened. And the girl was released. And then the girl's parents came to him and thanked him and all that. It is humility which makes the sage do things far beyond his capacity. And it is the humble who are closest to God. An absence of pride. If something good happens, by all means you feel great. Wow, this good thing happened in my life. But you know that it could not have happened if it wasn't God's will. Humility. Because that I did it goes. The whole universe conspired for that to happen. You were part of that. Humility. I was invited once to an ashram, I think about 15 years ago, to have lunch with the guru, me and a friend of mine. I would not like to reveal too much because it's someone who's very big. And the entire lunch, the guru was criticizing all the other living gurus. For 45 minutes, that is all I heard. And the next day, something happened and I got a phone call saying that, do you know, so-and-so hurt his jaw and had to get 38 stitches across. Instant karma. Because as Maharaj has said, to criticize anyone is to criticize the affairs of Brahman. You're criticizing God when you're criticizing anyone. And being a guru, you're taking down all the gurus one by one over a period of 45 minutes. So anyone on the spiritual journey, sitting in a place like this, or sitting in any ashram or anywhere, or in their homes, who are on a spiritual journey, are already being guided by the light. It is not their choice. And just trust that process which started it, because it is irreversible. You cannot take steps backward. Trust that same force which has put you on the path to take you forward. The nature of light is to shine, and shine it will. And the prayer which arises becomes a prayer of gratitude, not of wanting things any. My friend Rohit was telling me, someone asked him, that are our prayers usually answered? And he said, of course, your prayers are usually answered, and mostly the answer is no. Because you never know what is good for you when you ask as an individual. So that asking as an individual, that form of prayer starts dropping away. When we are young, we pray for a certain relationship, a girl we like, or the girl prays for the guy she likes, and they get together and then it doesn't work out. Invariably. Means you don't know what is good for you, right? So you have to trust the universe, the source, the force. Trust that to bring what is meant to come to you. Because that knows better. Anyone wants to share anything or ask anything?
I just wanted to say thank you so much, because before coming here there was immense confusion in my mind about things such as who is the guru disciple relation, and having met so many different masters in my head, who is truly my master. So it was this confusion, and some of the pointers that you gave bring in immense clarity around that. So I just
most welcome.